We had a primary election already in a number of counties across North Carolina a couple of days ago, including Durham and Wake counties most locally. And we're starting to get the numbers back from that, not just who won and who lost and who moves on to the general election, but also some numbers behind the numbers that suggest implications for where things stand politically and what we might be expecting for Election Day 2017 and maybe even elections in 2018 and beyond. Tom Jensen is the director of public policy polling based out of Raleigh National Polling Outfit. Publicpolicypolling.com is their website. And he joins us now on the air to take a look, first of all, at the implications from the numbers coming in from primary election day on Tuesday. Tom, thanks for being here today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
So what do we know about who turned out to vote, who didn't on Tuesday here locally and across the state? And what does that tell us about future elections, not just this one, but maybe how people might be thinking for 2018?
Well, we've been talking all year about how our polling shows that Democrats are more fired up than Republicans right now, and Democrats generally have an advantage going into 2018. And certainly, I think polling information is important for showing that. But we also have had these elections across the country this year that have sort of borne that out in real elections. And that came to North Carolina on Tuesday. So a couple cities I want to talk about in particular are Fayetteville and Raleigh. Obviously, most of North Carolina's major cities are very heavily Democratic, but Fayetteville is sort of an exception to that. It's more of a swing city. It goes back and forth between Republicans having control and Democrats having control. So in 2013, the longtime Democratic mayor retired, and the race to replace him, a Republican, got elected. So two-term Republican mayor, Nat Robertson, running for re-election for mayor of Fayetteville this year. And in the election on Tuesday, there were two Democratic candidates, and the two Democratic candidates got combined 67% of the vote to only 33% for the incumbent Republican in Fayetteville. And one of the two Democrats was 12 points ahead, 45-33 on the incumbent Republican. So he really only has to get a small share of the vote from the other Democratic candidate in November in order for that mayor's office to flip R to D when they have the second election next November. And one thing that I thought was particularly interesting was comparing the Fayetteville results from Tuesday night to the same election 2 years ago. The Republican candidate got 6% fewer votes than he had 2 Octobers ago. The two Democratic candidates got 129% more votes than the Democratic candidate had in 2015. So just this enormous increase in support for the Democrats and a decrease for the Republicans. And then the other big city that I thought was interesting Tuesday night was in Raleigh. This was a situation where the incumbent mayor, Nancy McFarlane, is unaffiliated but generally supported by Democrats. But for the first time, you had a serious Democratic candidate in addition to her, and then you had a Republican candidate. The Republican candidate only got 15% of the vote, and the Democrat and unaffiliated progressive candidate combined for 85%. And again, comparing it to 2015, the Republican vote was down by 15% in terms of how much support their candidate got. The combined vote for the Democratic candidate and the unaffiliated Democratic-leaning incumbent was up 66%. So what we really saw in both Raleigh and Fayetteville was this huge increase in turnout and huge increase in enthusiasm for the Democratic candidates and Republican enthusiasm down, actually fewer raw votes than they had in 2015.
So how does that typically compare, or how typically good a marker is the previous year's sort of odd number of year elections for what might come up in the following year's midterm or the even numbered year election?
They really can be a pretty good omen. If you go back to 2009, two really notable things happened in the elections in 2009 that I think pretty well portended what happened in 2010 politically, both in North Carolina and nationally. In 2009, Greensboro voted out an incumbent Democratic mayor and voted in sort of a Tea Party Republican as mayor of Greensboro, which definitely said something significant about the direction the political climate was going. And also in 2009, the Republican conservatives got control of the Wake County School Board. And that really, the sorts of changes that the Wake County School Board made were sort of a preview of what happened when Republicans got in control of the legislature with a lot of sort of overreachy things. So those two things that happened in the fall of 2009 really did sort of show what was coming in 2010. And I think it may very well be a situation this year where these good things that are happening for Democrats in 2017 are a sign of what's to come overall in 2018.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling, so that enthusiasm gap that we're seeing, stronger supporter enthusiasm for Democrats and a lot less enthusiasm for Republicans, what's driving that? Is that just Donald Trump sucking up all the air and people reacting to for or against him, or are there specific issues that are driving people to be more or less enthusiastic over and above just how we react to the president right now?
I think Trump is the big driver. I think that people on the Democratic side are just more fired up than they would usually be in general in an odd year, because Trump has created a greater sense of urgency. And I think that has some interesting implications for our elections in Chapel Hill and Carrboro this fall. Obviously, you're just choosing from different flavors of progressives for the most part in our local races in Southern Orange County. But what I think the implication is we could have much higher turnout than we usually would in a municipal election. And that's sort of a wild card. It's hard to say, you know, what side that necessarily benefits. But I remember we were talking on election night in 2013, which is a comparable election to this year in Chapel Hill with no competitive mayoral race, and just nobody voted in 2013. The turnout was incredibly weak. I want to say that people got elected to town council seats with, you know, 3,000-something votes. And I think that you're going to see a considerably higher turnout than that this year. I think it's possible we might even have a higher turnout this year than we did 2 years ago with an incredibly competitive mayoral race, just because we're seeing so much progressive energy that's manifesting itself even in voting in local elections. And I think that's maybe a little bit something that the incumbents need to worry about some of these races, because it's not just going to be necessarily that very small group of voters that turns out municipal election after municipal election and knows who everybody is and, you know, votes for them time after time. I think that there's going to be a lot of folks who are sort of new to the municipal electorate, and folks are going to have to be careful about appealing to some of those folks. And I also think that gives first-time candidates maybe a better opportunity than they would usually have when you have more folks who are sort of fresh to voting in local elections.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, publicpolicypolling.com is PPP's website if you want to go there and find out the latest numbers. Tom, I know you did a survey recently gauging national opinion on tax reform, which is what Donald Trump is occasionally trying to get people talking about these days. What did you find?
Well, we did polling on tax reform in 12 Republican-held congressional districts that are sort of seen as being swing seats. And I'll sort of look at the issue just through the lens of Iowa's first congressional district. This is somewhere that voted for Obama a couple times, then flipped to Trump last year. It had a Democratic congressman until 2014. The last couple terms, it's had a Republican congressman. So we just asked people in general, do you support or oppose the Republicans in Congress's tax proposal? Only 33% of voters support it, 48% oppose it. And we saw similar sorts of numbers to that in all of these swing districts, where even though these districts have leaned Republican the last few times, people are not down with the tax proposal. And there were a couple things that folks said they were particularly concerned about. One aspect of it, that 80% of the tax cuts will go to the top 1%. Only 18% of voters liked that aspect of the tax reform. 72% said they were opposed to it. Another aspect that we asked about, the fact that the tax plan would increase the deficit by $2.4 trillion over the next 10 years. Only 15% of voters said they were okay with that. 68% said they were opposed. We asked people if they knew that Donald Trump and his family were going to personally profit from the changes in the tax code. Would that make you more or less likely to support it? 41% said less likely, 19% said more likely. So definitely voters not very happy how much Trump and his family themselves would benefit. And then looking towards 2018, in terms of this as an electoral issue, we asked if your Republican congressman voted for that tax plan, would it make you less likely or more likely to vote for them next year? By a 25-point margin, people said voting for the tax plan would make them less likely to vote for their Republican congressman, 48% less likely, 23% more likely. So really across the board, I'd say these tax reform numbers look pretty familiar in the sense that they're very much like the numbers we've been talking about with health care all year. Voters didn't like the Republican health care plan, said they would take that out on their Republican incumbents at the polls. And we're seeing the same thing so far with tax reform.
And publicpolicypolling.com is the website. If you want to go there and find out more numbers, that's the website to do it. Tom Jensen, we got to let you go in a few minutes, but final thoughts?
Yes, my final thought is that I would like to wish you, Aaron, a very happy birthday.
Thank you.
And I'm going to sing you happy birthday and traumatize the
I'm glad you gave all of our listeners fair warning on that one.
Yeah, so here we go.
All right, go for it.
This is a birthday wish you'll never forget. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Aaron. Happy birthday to you.
This is why I do what I do. Thank you so much.
Yes, and I would just like to say that even though I sang you a sexy happy birthday, I am so happy for you and Brad and your impending wedding, and I hope he's not offended.
I'm sure he's not. I'll ask him, though, and find out for you.
Yes.
All right. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.